Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Gimel. So our last thing that we had done was we proved that Rav Papa had Charata and that Abba Shaul did not require both a Shavapruta and a Kizait. That's where we had gotten up to, and that was the word Shema Mino Hadabe, which was one-third of the way down on Omid Aleph. Now we have some additional answers to the original question. The original question that was driving Rav Nachman crazy was, how in the world did we start off in the Braita trying to bring a proof from the fact that there is a lesser chiyuv on the Me'ilah, since it's only a chiyuv of Mises Bezdin and not a chiyuv of Karez, and then in the middle of the argument switch and say, well, maybe the reason over there, by the other things like Chalev and Dam and so on, those things have chorus. But after all, this Me'ilah has Mises Bezdin and suddenly made it more chomor. Well, it makes no sense. Okay, so the approach that we took initially, the first approach was that he did not mean to say that the fact of Mises Bezdin is chomor. What he meant to say is that to be able to be Mechayev for Pochus Mikazayas, Achiev of Misa, now that's a chiddush, and that was the pshat. So it didn't mean misin meant, but pochas b'kizayis misin. Now let's take another approach, and this approach doesn't require that Rebbe should hold specifically like Abba Shaul, and that's its advantage. Marbarei d'Ravana is where we're up to. Marbarei d'Ravana says the meaning of that braisa is like this: Hachikam lo imamarta b'shar mitzvot shelo asabem she'inu mitkaven kemitkaven. Normally, mitzvahs, whatever they are, whether they're Shabbos or whether they're Achila of Chalev and so on, all of those mitzvahs share one thing in common. And that is that you cannot be mechuyev on them if your kavana was entirely different than the act that you went ahead and did. And the reason for this is because the Torah specifies, under all circumstances, a chet asher chataba. So it stresses that you only bring a korban for the chet that you wanted to do, asher chataba. Obviously, it was a shogeg. You didn't know that this was chaylev. You didn't know that this was dam. Masha enkein, and let's say if we're talking about Shabbos, by Shabbos we have even a broader idea, which is malachet machsheves asra Torah. So, but wherever you look, basically, we see that the Torah limits the chiyuv of a korban according to what it was that you intended to do. Now, the thing is, when it comes to Me'ilah, that is the one place where the Torah is mechayev you on the chiyuv of Me'ilah, even if what you ended up doing as the Me'ilah had nothing to do with your intent. And this is because there is no word when it comes to the carbon ashram of Me'ilah that describes something similar to asher chataba. So there is no question, obviously, of machsheves that's mentioned there. There's no din of ba that's mentioned there. It's because of that, it has a much broader envelope to be mechayev you. So that was our havamim. So maybe if you could be over on Me'ilah with an eno miskavein, then you should also, perhaps, end up being chayev on Me'ilah, even b'mezit. That was the reason why we need b'shkaga. And that's what the real meaning of that braisa was. Not just the fact that you're mechuyev a Mises Bezdin, and that's obvious. So here would be the way to read that. So for instance, lo im amarta b'shar mitzvot shelo aseh b'hem she'ino miskaven kemiskaven. For instance, im nitkaven lachtoch et hatolush v'chatach et hamechubar. Now you take a pair of scissors and or a knife and you're about to cut a cucumber that was lying on the ground, and you're chopping up cucumbers, and oh my God, all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, this cucumber was actually growing. Oh my goodness, you had no idea that it was growing. And so what you ended up doing was harvest cucumbers, not dice vegetables. Now that's a completely different thing. You do that on Shabbos. Of course, for Shabbos, you'd be putter because it's not considered to be malachas machsheves. But the same thing would be true in all other cases that would be similar. And let's say in the case of Me'ilah, okay, in the case of Me'ilah, you had in front of you two piles of wool. One pile was a pile of the shearings that were chulin, and one pile you had over there were shearings that were kodesh. And you were busy talking on the phone. You stuck out your hand without looking, thinking that you were taking from the pile that was chul. And it turned out you took from the pile that was kodesh. It doesn't matter in terms of the dinim of me'ilah, because there's nothing that implies that your act has to be the specific initial intent of that act when it comes to me'ilah, which means that there's a bigger chiyuv when it comes to me'ilah. And over there, you would be ma'al. Therefore, need a special pasuk to tell me you're only ma'al b'shogeg. Actually, the point was this, and it was a little bit more limited than the way you said it. I don't like the way you said it, because the way you said it was a level of enom iskavein that I'm not sure that I agree with. What I would like to say is that there's no chiyev of mitasek. What I don't like about what you said is that ultimately you're talking about a case where the guy intended to do precisely what it was that he did. He just made the mistake of what it was, but he was taking a knife and he was going to cut it, right? Okay, so that was still the act of cutting. The act of cutting, whether it's mechuber or whether it's not mechuber, is the same act of cutting. Setting a shor over here, he was going to warm himself up, utilizing these gizei tzemer. It's the same act. The correct way to say it is where it wasn't even the same act. So I would say it like this. Lo yimar b'sham mitzvot, shekein lo mitchayebem she'ina mitasek, kimitasek. Why don't you go for a complete and total mitasek? Now, mind you, that the first case that we spoke about is also nominally considered to be a form of mitasek. This is, however, a much broader idea of mitasek. Mitasek is you are busy doing something else entirely. That's the point. So, technically speaking, we could use the word for mitasek on the first cases as well. In fact, Rashi actually does. But the idea over here is a total mitasek. I'll give you an example, okay? Let's say you bent down to pick up a cucumber that's lying on the floor. So you have no intention of cutting anything at all. You're going to pick it up because it fell off of the table. Now, it turned out to be the cucumber that was attached to the ground, so that when you picked it up to put it on the table, you were actually cutting it from the ground. That's a completely different act. So the equivalent act, now over there you would be potter, of course. The equivalent story for me'ilah would be something that was much more dramatic, okay? Let me give you the case. Tomar b'me'ilah. Let's say what happened is you had a container of oil of hegdash, and you had another container of scarves that were your chulin scarf. You put your hand in the drawer to take out a scarf, and accidentally you stuck it into the container that had the oil, in which now you have immersed your hand in oil of kodesh. That's absolutely zero connection between what you intended to do. You it's not as if you were going to go oil your hand with chulin. You weren't going to oil your hand at all. You're simply going to grab a scarf from the shelf. So that is what you want to contrast it to. And that would be the v'der im nitasek. Let's say he wanted to be moshit yado l'kli l'tol chefetz. And in the end, there's oil in the drawer and sach yado b'sham and shakodesh. Even so, he was mile. Now that is a real total misasek. And that would be a reason for me to think, wow, if the Torah is mechayev me'ilah in a case like that, so maybe it would be mechayev me'ilah in much broader terms, even if it wasn't Bishkagah. Therefore, I need the pasuk to tell me Bishkagah. That's what the Braita actually had said, and not the way that it was understood by Nachman originally, that it was contrasting Misas Bezdin with, Misa Bidei Shamayim with Koris Bidei Shamayim. That wasn't the point at all. Okay. Anyway, let us continue and go back to the statement that was made yesterday. Statement that was made yesterday was, now, we have been concentrating for the past few days about what the situation would be of someone who was ochel or nene from truma that was chametz. And the question is, again, is there special dinim that has to do with truma because of the fact that perhaps it's b'mida kamishalim, and therefore it's irrelevant whether it's aser bana, muter bana, and all of the other questions that were raised meanwhile in the context of that discussion. So we had just come out with a statement before, which Abaya had used, as part of his proof that it seems to be a machlokes tanoim, whether you pay lefi midah or you pay lefi damim. And it was like a throwaway line at the time, and we didn't look much into it. It's time to look into it. The throwaway line was that everybody would agree that there's no such animal as chametz, which is truma. Because you can't make chametz truma, because it has to be roi in the first place to be truma, and that means that it would have to be capable of having value to the kohen, or we'll see what the problem is. And therefore, the only way it was possible is with, at the time that you took off the truma, it wasn't chametz, and then it became chametz. Or, obviously, you made a truma before Pesach. I mean, that's a given. But the chiddush that we wanted to say was that there's no such thing as being mafrish trumas chometz b'Pesach. Now, I'm assuming that when you say everybody agrees, the chiddush that everybody agrees means that you're including even Rabbi Yossi Aglili. In other words, even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says that chometz is mutar b'hana'ah, don't think that that means that you can make your truma out of chametz. Now, why not? I mean, I took it at your word, but why not? I don't understand why that necessarily would be true. I mean, I understand that if you hold that chametz is osur b'ana. Okay, so then we have the pasuk v'natan la'kohen et ha'kodesh. So it has to be capable of being kodesh, or it has to be capable of a netina, which means that it has something that the value in it that I could consider it to be v'natan. So it's a dover ha'ra'ui. Okay, so according to them, it was obvious. I mean, I didn't think you needed even to make the statement according to Rabbi Shimon or according to Rabbi Yehuda. But when you made that statement, you said nobody would think that you could make truma out of chametz during Pesach. Why? I mean, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, truma is mutar b'ana, so it's a valuable nesina. What's exactly the problem? You know what I mean? Omer of Nachum by Yitzchak Omar Kra, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, even this case would be covered by the pasuk of Titein Lo. Reishit degancha tirashcha v'yitzarecha v'reishit geis tzonecha Titein Lo. Now, we've been talking about the Kohen all along. The stress on the idea of Lo, it's got to be coming to add something, as Tosfos points out, because we already had the idea of V'natan LaKohen Et HaKodesh, and we understood that there were limitations on the nature of the Netina. So why would we stress Lo? I'll tell you why. Because what it's saying is it's meant for his personal concrete utilization, which would include ingestion, consumption, not for his fireplace. So that's not called give it to him. So it would be lo velo l'uro. Give it to him, but not for his fireplace, which means that if the only thing that he can do with it is get hanof from it at a distance, then that is not considered to be intimate. And lo means an intimate usage. That's the reason. Masi Ravuna Breder of Yeshua, you cannot take off truma tmeya on peirot that are tar. But if you did, and you didn't mean to do it, then it's a good enough truma. I don't understand why now, if in fact you are correct, and that the Torah itself has limited what it is that you were considered to be a potential truma, and it has to be lo, velola oro. So then if it's tame, it's not potential truma. So I don't understand how you're getting away with it. I don't care whether you meant to do it or you didn't mean to do it. The fact is, the Torah said that's not called the netina of truma that I'm talking about. So how do you explain the fact, Ramai? Lema lo, velola oro. Truth is, you are absolutely correct. But again, oversimplification gets in the way. And that's because we need to consider two possible scenarios. There might be something which is lo velolo uro in the sense of it never was something. Remember, we're talking about potentiality, correct? So potentiality means, okay, here's the set of things from which you can give truma. That's your whole problem. Your problem is if the Torah said lo velolo uro, then that's not a member of the set of potential truma, right? But whenever we're defining a set of that kind, we run into another problem. And that problem, which we've had many, many contexts, is called Sha'at HaKosher. Sha'at HaKosher means, can something be a member of a set even though it currently does not fulfill the requirements of that set? once it's been defined. So in other words, something which at one time could have been truma, and now something happened to it to make it unavailable for his intimate users. It became chometz, it became tameh, but became, was initially usable. Then might it still be considered to be that which is still included in lo v'lo la'oro? This is lo, or just something happened to it. So it's the coincidental or the fundamental. That's the question. Is it innate to this thing that it's lo v'lo la'oro and excluded, or could it be included? And therefore, I say there's no problem. There we're talking about hatam haitalo sha'at ha'kosher. And here, when we're talking about everybody's motive, there's no way you could make that into truma. You know what that's talking about? That's talking about it never even had a moment during which you could have used it to give truma. Well, I understand. Well, what does that mean? It never had a moment. I mean, you're holding it, and it had to have first not been chometz, and then yes, been chometz, right? I mean, like, where is there a case where it never had a moment in which it could have been truma? The only thing I can come up with, I mean, it's sort of a weird case. The only thing I can come up with is that this was exposed while it was still connected. In other words, you hadn't even harvested it yet. And there was such a downpour that actually things became chometz while they were still attached to the ground. A rather rare situation. I mean, hechidami, the only case I can come up with is kagon de achmitz b'mechubar. So then it had to have been that at the moment that you picked it, because before you pick it, then it's not even within the realm of the space of truma. You can't, truma that isn't picked, remember, it has to be digancha. Digancha is only after it's picked and processed to put it to a kri. If it's attached to the ground, then obviously lo v'lo lo did not as yet apply. And therefore, since at the moment that you picked it, it was already chometz, I guess that's the only case we're talking about that never had a shat hakosher. I mean, it's a pretty strange case, but I mean, are you trying to tell me that that's the case we're talking about? That in any event, that it would have been chometz only a moment after it was picked. Now, then you're saying I would be able to give that to the kohen, and it would be a kosher truma. Is that what you're saying? Because I find that very far-fetched. And he answered him, not only do I say that, okay, buddy, it's not just that I say it. This has been something that is part of the decree of the very angels in heaven. And by the very words of the Holy One, this is, of course, we're taking a takeoff over here on the words of the Malach in Daniel. So, Begizrat Irin Pidgama, Umamar Kedishin Sheilta. So this is what he was referring to, of course, was that this has already been passed in the Beis HaMedrash by the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, who, as far as I'm concerned, are angels and the holiest of holies. So give it up, buddy. It's over. Yes, this is what they say in the Beis HaMedrash. V'chein morin b'bei midrash kavati. This is the only understanding of it, and it works. You consider it to be far-fetched, so is COVID-19. Ki'ata Rav Huna, Bereder of Yoshua. So now when Rav Huna, Bereder of Yeshua, comes along, he said that, look, there's a completely different, ingenious basis for this thing, okay, which gets us out of the whole pickle. And that is, notice that the Pasuk, when it talks about Truma, it calls it Reishis Digancha, right? What does Reishis mean? Reishis always means that something has emerged that has changed the status of that which it left behind. It has to be Shishiarea Nikarim. This is the Reishis. This is what the emergence of the Reishis has done, meaning that it's been matir all of the tvua that is not the Reishis, correct? But how about in a case where when you take off the Reishis, there is no discernible difference in what's left behind? It's exactly the same state that it was before. What am I talking about? I'm talking about chometz, baby. Because over here, yatztazu, since I never change anything, because when I go ahead and I take off the truma, I still am not allowed to eat the shirayim, right? So this is reishit she'in shiarea nikarin. Because before it was usher, it would have been usher no matter what. It was usher because it was tevel. But even after I take off the truma and it's not tevel, it is still chametz. And even, we're saying, okay, but what about according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili? So even according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, there's no real change. Because he says you can be nene from chametz, but you could be nene from tevel too. So therefore, what'd you do? When you went ahead and you were mafresh this truma, and now you change the tevel into chulin. So, okay, thank you. How do I discern the difference? Therefore, by definition, there is no way to separate a reishis from a acharis. There's no way to have a shiraim that are defined differently by the reishis. Ingenious. And that would be a completely new approach to why everybody would agree, even Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, that there is simply no way to take off truma if it's not going to cause a difference to that which was left behind, and that explains why truma's chametz. There's no way to create truma's chametz. Beautiful. Okay. Now let's see how that relates to this discussion over here. Rav Acha bar Rav Avia was sitting in front of Rav Chisda, and he was quoting Rabbi Yochanan as saying the following. If you have grapes that were tummy, you can still get kosher wine for the Beis HaMikdash out of these grapes. Now, that's a remarkable statement. I mean, you would think that if the grapes are tummy, then if you squeeze them and get wine out of them, then that wine is going to be tummy. You certainly can't use it for the Nesachim on the Mizbeach, can you? But I have an approach to why you can. What you need to do is basically press less than the shear of a kebetza and remove the wine as it comes off of less than one kebetza at a time. And then the wine would be kosher for nisachim. Why is that? Because you need to have the shear of a kebetza in order for the tumah to be transferable to something else. And therefore, as long as you use less than a kebetza at one time, there's not sufficient volume of the grapes to be mitame the mashkin. And therefore, I can't give off the tuma, even though it is tame, because the Torah said specifically, b'kol ha'ochel asher ye'achel. I mean, that usually is the definition of food, isn't it? Any food which is eaten, thank you very much. You can just say the food. So the idea of a year, as Rashi brings from Taras Kohanim, this, by the way, is big machlokas, which we've had all over Shas, between Rashi and Tosafot, but according to Rashi, the idea of a year is like this. This is what it seems to say in the Taras Kohanim, that Bikola Ochel is any food. And then that is in terms of the food itself becoming tummy. But then Asher Ye Achel means it would not be able to transfer its tumah to something else unless it is the shear of food that can be eaten, which is the maximum that can be eaten in one swallow, which remember when it came to Yom Kippur, the Gemara in Yuma defined that as the amount of a normal beitzah. And since the grapes are not that size over here, so they're not going to be metame, the grape juice that comes from them. Now, that is weird, because this grape juice was part of the grapes just a minute ago. So I don't understand. If the grape was tame, how did the grape juice avoid becoming tame? I mean, why would it need to get a separate tuma by touching the grape, which was its original status? It's already tame, right? Unless you understand that the relationship of a liquid that is held within a fruit is that we view the liquid as not to be embedded in the body of the fruit, but we look at the liquid as being contained within cellular mechanisms, membranes that view the liquid as remaining separate, and then it only gets to be a usable liquid when it's squeezed, which is must be what Rabbi Yochanan holds. So Alma Kasavra Mashkin Mifkat Pakidi, so he considers the juice of a fruit not to be part of the fruit, but to be held within the fruit as if it's a container. And therefore, when does this juice become ro'oi, to be a mashkin, to be makabel tuma? Only when you squeezed it. And therefore, it now comes into maga with the grape. And at that point, it would be makabel tuma as a mashka. The point is, however, that once you've done that, you needed to have the kebetza, and you have less than a kebetza. And therefore, as long as you use less than a kebetza, you've never got a problem, says the Gemara. Now, hold on. If that's the meaning, I think I caught you. Because why did you have to start with less than a kibbutzah. Let me ask you something. When we measured the shear of the grape, did we include the actual liquid that's in the grape with its measurement? Darn right we did. When it comes to the shear of how big the grape is, obviously, we don't view it as a desiccated grape. We take it as it is. As a matter of fact, the Gemara even discusses cases where if it rains on something, let's say a piece of chalev that was less than a kezias, and the rain expands the chalev and now it becomes a kezias, the rain is included as part of the chalev, okay? So certainly over here, the liquid in the grape is part of the grape, not vis-a-vis the din of tumah, I understand. You just proved that to me. But certainly it is part of the grape. There's no way out of that. So now, if that's the case, you spoke about having precisely a kibbutzah? No. You spoke about a case, I need to start with less than a kibbutzah. Why do I need to start with less than a kibbutzah? Let's start with a kibbutzah, precisely, squeeze it, and now the first little bit of liquid comes out. But the moment that the first little bit of liquid comes out, there is no longer precisely a kibbutzah in the grape. So why did Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan should have been very careful, because he would want to communicate the way that this halacha works. So he should have said, you could start with exactly a kibbutzah and then squeeze it, because at that moment, you will never have a case where you're going to be metame the mashkin. I mean, that's certainly much more striking than saying that you have to start with less than a kibbutzah, right? I mean, he's coming to tell you how you can manage this. So give it to me in its most dramatic format. Yochi. Start with kibbutzah nami, because after all, we have a Mishnah in Tyrus that says that if somebody is a tamei mace, as opposed to a zov, now a zov is going to always be metame just by causing things to move, right? But a tamei mace is only going to be metame something by actually coming into contact with it. So let's say that a tamei mace ends up squeezing olives or grapes, and there was exactly one kibbutzah, then even though the grapes themselves will be kabbal tuma, but the juice will not. And the taurin, the juice will be tar, because the moment that I squeezed even a tiny bit from it, since I defined the case as being precisely a kibbutzah, it is now less than a kibbutzah. So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan understand that our case could have been just as dramatic as that Mishnah was? No, come on, because a Mishnah is a theoretical case, okay? It's talking about if the case happened. Hatam de'i avad. Rabbi Yochanan is telling you, halacha, I can give you a way by which you can practically get kosher wine for the Mizbeach out of your tamei grapes. Okay, now obviously, if he's giving you practical advice, he cannot talk about a laboratory situation where you have precisely one kezias, which is laser calibrated in the lab. He's going to talk about a practical case, and therefore he's going to be quite nervous at giving you the rights to define a precise basis. Because of that, Gezeira Dilmati Lamevad Yotermi Kibetza. He's worried if he tells you you could take a Kibetza, you'll take a Kibetza plus another 1%. And then not meaning to, but then that 1% will be the liquid, and then you will be metami the liquid. So he wants to make sure that doesn't happen. Come on. I mean, that's very reasonable. Said Rav Chisda, when he heard Rav Acha by Rav Avia come up with this idea that according to Rav Yochanan, he could actually squeeze tamei grapes and get kosher tar wine for the Mizbeach, you gotta be nuts. You think you're gonna find somebody dumb enough to listen to this? Not to you, not to your teacher, Rav Yochanan. This is off the wall. Man sayet lechav l'Rav Yochanan Rabach. You're not gonna find one person dumb enough to believe this. Where the heck did the tuma that originally affected this liquid, where exactly did you get rid of this tuma in the process of squeezing? I never heard of squeezing tuma out of something. I mean, this is nuts. Well, obviously, he holds that a liquid is part of the fruit. And to start talking about, the liquid is actually held in these microcosmic little cellular containers. What kind of nonsense is that? Liquid is part of the fruit. That's the idea. So, of course, Alma Kasavar Mashkin Mivlabli. So he holds that the juice of a fruit is part of the actual meat of the fruit. The moment that the edible portion which at that point included the liquids, was mekabel tumah, so too did the mashkin component become tamei. And therefore, when you're squeezing it out, you're squeezing out something which is already tamei. It's not that it's going to be mekabel tumah from the outside skin of the grape, for God's sake. It was part of the initial tumah that the grape was mekabel. Amar lei, so Rav Acha bar Avya said to Rav Chisda, hey, you know, before you jump at me and claim that I'm off the wall, why don't you recognize that there's no choice but to say what I'm saying, okay? And I'll prove it to you. Va'at lo tizbra damashkin mifkat pkide. You don't believe that liquids are held within what is effectively a separate container while they're inside of a kli, of a pri. But that's ridiculous, because how in the world did you understand the Mishnah? We just talked about the Mishnah, right? We talked about a tamei mate that was sochet zeitim va'avanim, and they were exactly a kibetza, they're tahorim. Now, how in the world are they tahorim? If the tamei mace were squeezing it, so how could they be tahorim? He touched the fruit. The only way to understand the Mishnah was that in touching the fruit, he was not metame the wine, and therefore, if there was exactly a kibetza, there'd be no problem. I mean, what else is the Mishnah saying? How are you arguing with me? So, Yemet Bishlom and Vifkat Pkidei, that would explain why it's tar. If you're going to tell me that Mashkin or Mivla Bali, so the moment that the Tameh mates touch the grapes, that's it. He should have been metame permanently, all of the juice. Said Rav Chisda, man, you don't understand the Mishnah at all. You've created a completely different situation in this Mishnah, in which the Mishnah is revolving around the shear of a kibetza that is roy to be mekabel tumah after it becomes mashkin, and it's now less than a kibetza. Oh, come on. That's not what it's about. Oh, you're wild. It's very simple. Nothing is mekabel tumah unless it was mukshar lekabel tumah when it was an ochlin, correct? So it needed to be exposed to one of the seven mashkin, which includes grape juice. So, but before it was exposed to water after picking, and before it was exposed to grape juice, if it wasn't exposed to water, it will not be mekabel tumah. I don't care if it touches the mace himself. That's what we're talking about over here. So what the Mishnah is saying is, if you start off with precisely a kibetza, okay, and it was not hukshar, when do they become roy to be mekabel tumah? Only at the moment that you squeeze the juice, and the juice that comes out, that makes the grape roy lekabel tumah, because now it came in contact with the actual juice. So even though before the juice is exuded, the mace is handling the grape, the grape is not going to become tamei at all. That's for sure. So now what happened is, now this, you have to understand, is apparently going according to the sheet. And I mentioned to you, there was this big machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, about whether food is actually mekabel tumah if it's less than a kibetza. So what this appears to be going, according to Rav Chisda, he understands that the din that it's mekabel tumah with pachas mikabetza is only a derabbanan. And he is talking about the deraisa. There are those who hold that bechlal, it's not mekabel tumah pachas mikabetza, in which case this is perfectly understandable. At what point will the grape become roy for kabbalas tumah? Only when I started squeezing. And then the grapes became wet. But at that point, there is no longer a kibetza. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. So even though now they are, you could tell me they're roik to be mekabel tumah because they're wet, but I can't be metami then. But enochinami, if it was a little bit more than a kibetza, and now I squeeze out, now the wine was makshar lekabel tumah, and then enochinami, the whole thing would be mekabel tumah. And by the way, says Rav Chisda, your insane explanation of the Mishnah, by which we're talking about things that were mukshar, and magically the liquid didn't get tamei when the grape did become tamei, which I think is crazy. If you don't accept what I'm saying, in other words, if you do not believe that we consider the liquid to be part of the grape. How do you explain Hadatanya? We've got the Braita that we mentioned before. Remember when we had the whole discussion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? And remember what he said to him is, what are you talking about? Over here, this would be the same thing as truma of strawberries that are tummy. What's he supposed to do with that? He's supposed to burn strawberries in the fireplace? He's got nothing to do with it. That's what he said. Halama zedomeh. That's what Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. You want to talk about a case where there's nothing that the Kohen has in it and tell me that he has to be paid for something that is valueless? This is no different than strawberries or trumas tutim or fine anavim. I don't care, but ein lo ba lo heter achila v'lo heter asaka. He won't be able to eat it and he won't be able to burn it. Now, according to you, that makes no sense, because there is a actually not, forget about heter hatzaka. According to you, in the same way there's a way to get kosher wine out of tamei grapes, there is a way to get a delicious strawberry juice drink out of these strawberries, because they don't have to be tamei, according to you. Just take less than a kibetza of strawberries and have yourself a delicious strawberry drink, and the Kohen then has definitely got Hanon. Yet Rabbi Akiva is sitting here screaming, I mean, so why do you have to pay for it if it isn't worth anything? There you go. Because according to you, Eboy, if he had wanted to, all he needs to do is get together. Each time he wants a cup, he takes less than a kibetz of strawberries, and he drinks the juice. So why does it say there's no way that the Kohen's going to be able to get any Hanon of Achila? He certainly does. Now that is a darn good point. Says Rava, no, there's a way to understand that. Because, I mean, the reason that the Kohen, Rabbi Akiva is telling me there's no way that the Kohen's going to be able to get any anav from that, is because we're nervous that there, and we made therefore takana, so the midrabbana, we made a takana that you can't squeeze truma, which is tame, because while you're squeezing those yummy-looking strawberries, what is it that will prevent you from putting a nice, delicious, squishy strawberry right into your oral cavity before you put it into the squeezer? And therefore, we cannot let you do something that would be the same as entrusting the cat with the milk. So, no, you can't do that. Omele, I'll buy you, wait a second over here. We don't worry about that. I mean, everybody knows the Braisa, which is really, I mean, I don't know why we bring this up, Tanya, it's really a mission as well. Madlikin bepat u b'shemen shel truma shenitmeit. You are allowed to make a fire and utilize oil in a lamp or truma, solid truma that was tamei, and warm yourself with it or light your table with it. Why can you do that? Why don't we have to worry that you're going to end up popping some into your mouth, using a little bit of that delicious olive oil for salad dressing? So apparently we are not concerned, and there is no such takana derabanan to avoid takala. That's your imagination. Omar Lay, not true, said Rava. The only time that you would be allowed to utilize truma that is tamei, even if you're a kohen, is you would have to take, let's say, the bread, and you'd have to throw it into your storage pile of filthy wood, and therefore nobody's going to eat it. So at that point, we don't worry about the takala. And when it comes to the oil of truma, you rami lebekli ma'us, like we said before, you'll have to put it into some disgusting container in which you don't care to burn it, but you certainly do care about putting it into your mouth. So I believe that takala is definitely a problem. And that would explain why it is that Rabbi Akiva was convinced that there's nothing that the Kohen is going to be able to get out of this. Gufa, can we look at that for a moment? You say that madlikin bepata b'shemen shel truma shenitmeit, you're allowed to light it, and Abaya quotes Chizkia, and Rava quotes the Talmidim in the Beis HaMedrash, Rav Chitzchak bar Marta, who quoted Rav Huna, and they said this is only useful when it comes to bread, because you can make bread nauseating by making it filthy. But if you're talking about wheat, there's no way you can use wheat to burn in a fire, because over there, since the wheat is going to be processed, there's nothing that you can do to make them non-processable. And because of that, you may end up shami yavo b'emle de takala, and there really is an isser of a gezeira derabbanan not to come lidei takala. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says not true. Even wheat. Why? Don't we need to be worried about the takala like we just said? I mean, that was Rava's whole approach. No. Because what we can talk about is, like Rav Ashi said, and that was, we're talking about, he said it in a different context, which we'll see in a moment what that context was, but we're talking about the wheat kernels that had been first stewed up, and then after they hardened, you threw them into the wood pile, and then they really become disgusting, and you're not going to be able to use it. That was what Rabbi Yochanan was saying when he said there is certainly a way to avoid takala. Where exactly did Rav Ashi say that? What was the context? He was talking about Rav Avin bar Rav Alcha Rav Yitzchak, who pointed out that Abba Shaul, this is, you want to have real high quality dough kneaders. What, are you going to hire some kind of lousy baker? You can get Abba Shaul at, I mean, you could if you're Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And sure enough, Abba Shaul was the chief kneader in Rebbe's household. So he was the Gabal of Beit Rebbe Haya. And what they would do is they would heat up water for him. And they used Chitim Shatruma Temeya Lalushbam Isa B'Tahara. Now, he was very mocked, but obviously Rebbe only ate his Chulin B'Tahara, as we saw in many cases. And there were Kohanim that were working there in Beis HaShel Rebbe who were allowed to be Nene from Truma Temeya. And indeed, they would heat up the water with Truma Temeya wheat in Rebbe's house. And this was even though they needed to use that water while it was Tahar, they weren't worried that it was going to come into contact with it and make it Tame. Why? Because basically, you make it into a non-Ochlin. Why is that? Am I? Why aren't we worried about a takala? That's where Rav Ashi said in Rebbe's house, we were talking about shlikata umeisata. They had already been boiled up and therefore were capable of absorbing a lot of filth, which they actually made sure that they did. And then they were able to use it as fuel without coming lidei takala, no longer had a din of ochlin. So once I separated them out, for burning, I take off the halach of Oakland, the Gabi Tuma.